Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Mastering the Maypole Festival brings lawn games of yesteryear to historic Brown Dorsey home by Kelsey Salinas, staff writer. Spring brings longer and warmer days, and with it, a celebration at the historical Brown Dorsey Medallion Home, the Midland Historical Society, an organization that focuses on preserving West Texas history, hosts the Maypole Festival on Saturday at the oldest house in Midland at 213 North Weatherford. In 1882, Zachary Taylor Brown, an Illinois native, moved from East Texas to a ranch 7 miles northwest of Midland with his wife Sarah Mulholland and their 4 children. Brown sold his ranch after digging to make a water well several times and instead finding black gunk, said Margaret Wade, chair of the Maypole Festival. Brown then bought construction plans and lumber from T.B. Wadley, a local lumberyard owner, in 1899 to build his new house. The Victorian home was inherited by their daughter, Sarah Brown Dorsey, where she lived with her children until she died in 1968. The Midland Historical Society acquired the house in 1969. Maypole Festival. The Maypole Festival celebrates the beginning of spring and features different games that date back centuries, as the Maypole Dance, croquet, hopscotch, washers, horseshoes, egg and spoon race, jump rope, and picnic basket decorating. Members of the Midland Historical Society chose the activities for the festival after getting together and thinking about what kind of games children would have planned during Brown's time. Most of us were children in the 50s. We thought about what we played and did some research, Wade said. Some of these games have been around for 2,000 years. People have always played them. If you've never played these lawn games before, or you need a refresher on how to play, here's a guide that will tell you some history and basic rules of each game. Maypole Dance traces back 2,000 years to Roman Britain. During this period, soldiers danced around decorated trees to celebrate the beginning of spring. Today, the Maypole Dance is more like the 600-year-old British tradition. To dance the Maypole Dance, you need at least 6 participants. There are different colored ribbons tied around the pole, and the goal is to weave the ribbons around the pole while dancing. Then, participants will reverse their steps to unwind the ribbons. Unwinding the ribbons represents the lengthening days in spring, Wade said. Croquet. There are many theories about where croquet first started, but many believe that it was first played in France in the 13th century. The versions of croquet we play now traces back to England and Ireland in the 1850s. To play croquet, you need 2 to 4 players, some mallets, 4 balls, 6 hoops, and a center peg. The hoops will be arranged on the lawn, and the goal of the players is to advance their balls through the hoops in each direction and hit the balls toward the center peg at the end. Hopscotch. Hopscotch traces back to the Roman Empire. Soldiers would complete a hopscotch course as part of their training to improve footwork and balance. To play hopscotch, players will create a grid of squares on the ground. Each player needs their own marker, like a small stone, that they will toss toward the grid. If the marker lands inside the square, the player can advance by hopping on the grid, but they can't hop on the square their marker is in. Washers. The washer's toss also has many theories about where it started. Some believe it originated in ancient Greece. Others say it was the Midwest in the 1800s. There's even a theory that washer's toss is traced back to the Texas oil field in the early 20th century, where blue-collar workers would toss washers toward a cup or a hole in the ground. To play washers, each player will throw 4 washers toward the 2 different target boxes. Points are determined based on where each washer lands in relation to the target. The first team to reach 21 points wins the game. Horseshoes. The horseshoes game also started during the Roman Empire when soldiers would gather horseshoes and toss them toward a target. Horseshoes are played with 2 players with 4 horseshoes. Each player will alternate throwing both of their horseshoes toward the targets, which is usually 2 stakes in the ground. Scoring depends on where the horseshoes land each round. Egg and spoon race. The egg and spoon race dates back to England in the 1890s and was a part of the village celebration during Queen Victoria's Diamond Jubilee. For the race, players need an egg and spoon. Racers are only allowed to hold the spoon with 1 hand. If they drop the egg or touch it with their other hand, they will have to start over again. Jump rope. Jump rope, also known as rope skipping, traces back to 1600s Netherlands. It has been a staple game around the world for many years and was often played during Chinese Lunar Year celebrations. There are many ways to jump rope. People can jump rope individually or make it a group activity. The jump rope game usually has 2 people hold a long rope and move it in circles while a person in the middle jumps each time the rope is at their feet. If the person messes up, They will now replace one of the jump rope holders. Other players can jump in to join the first jumper to see how many people can jump at once. Another variation is for players to run in, jump the rope, and run out. Now that you know how to play these century-old games, you can join in at the free Maypole Festival on Saturday, April 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the historic Brown Dorsey Home. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, April 26th, 2024. TxDOT projects reach major milestones. New ramps announced for Midkiff Bridge, Yukon Road in Odessa reaches completion. A new westbound entrance ramp is also scheduled to open a week after the exit ramp within the same vicinity. Both of these features are said to provide increased access for westbound I-20 motorists between SH 349 and FM 1788. Another update provided by the state included the bridge at County Road 1250. TxDOT officials say the bridge is complete and is now carrying traffic. The bridge decks for Midkiff and Cotton Flat bridges are complete and concrete paving has begun on the main lanes approaching both bridges. TxDOT said the transportation district also advised that I-20 travelers should see paving crews work nights, days, and weekends to complete the pavings and open Midkiff and Cotton Flat to north-south traffic as soon as possible. Cotton Flat Road is now connected to the frontage road of I-20, providing more efficient access to the interstate on both the north and south sides of the interstate. James Construction was awarded the Midkiff Bridge project with a bid of approximately $36.3 million. FNF Construction was awarded the adjacent Cotton Flat Bridge project with a bid of approximately $68.5 million. Another project by the TxDOT has been completed in Odessa. A new overpass for LP 338 to cross over Yukon Road is finished. The project details include the construction of a new interchange consisting of grading, a new bridge, traffic signals, illumination, signs, pavement, and pavement markings. TxDOT officials said that creating a new interchange at this location provided more efficient and safe travel for motorists traversing LP 338. The project began in December 2020 and was completed in February 2024. The construction cost for the project came with a price tag of $15.7 million, and the contractor was Regal Construction, Inc. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud. Pecos welcomes professional baseball team, April 24th, 2024, by Staff Report. A ribbon-cutting event in Pecos on Monday welcomed a brand-new professional baseball club, the Pecos Bills. The Bills play in the Pecos League, and their home opener will be May 28th against the Alpine Cowboys at Cyclone Parks. Teams in the Pecos League play in cities that don't have major or minor league baseball teams. They are not affiliated with those organizations either. In its inaugural season of 2011, the Pecos League was based along the Pecos River from Alpine, Texas, to Roswell, New Mexico. Now the league offers two divisions spanning the plains of Kansas to the oceans of California to the Texas-Mexico border, the Bakersfield Train Robbers in California, the Santa Fe Fuego in New Mexico, the Tucson Saguaros in Arizona, and the Garden City Wind in Kansas are among the teams. The Pecos Bills play in the Mountain Division. In the Mountain Division, which features teams in Texas, New Mexico, Kansas, Colorado, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Arizona. The Pacific Division features all teams in California. The league does not use a designated hitter. Rawlings is the official game ball. Players are required to use MLB-approved bats. The league's high-power offenses are fueled by high altitudes and smaller ballparks, league officials said. In an interview with NewsWest 9 at Monday's ribbon cutting, Andrew Dunn, Pecos Bills owner, expressed excitement to play ball in Pecos. "We are glad to be here to bring some baseball," he said. The town of Pecos City is certainly showing its pride for its new team, stating online, "Welcome home, Pecos Bills," with the hashtag, "Our Town, Our Team." Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Sibley Nature Center set for Spring Festival, April 25, 2024, by Kathy Chateau. The Sibley Nature Center is ushering in the season with an action-packed Spring Festival this Saturday, April 27th, featuring guided nature hikes, garden tours, a reptile magic show, free Shipley donuts, and more. The free admission event runs from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the center located at 1307 East Wadley Avenue in Midland. Texas Park and Wildlife, the Petroleum Museum, the Museum of the Southwest, Keep Midland Beautiful, Scooter Dog, and Pucker Up Lemonade are partnering to make the event memorable. See the flyer for more information. The Sibley Nature Center is located at 1307 East Wadley Avenue in Midland, Texas. Questions? Call 432-684-6827. Find this story and audio for blind and low vision adults 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Miranda Lambert to perform live at Momentum Bank Ballpark, April 23, 2024, by staff report. Grammy-winning Miranda Lambert will perform live at Momentum Bank Ballpark on June 29, the Midland Rockhounds recently announced. It will mark Lambert's debut performance at the Midland Ballpark and is part of the Music on the Diamond series by Diamond Baseball Holdings, DBH, owner of the Rockhounds. Tickets go on sale to the public starting Friday, April 26th, and are expected to sell out quickly. Visit MILB.com/Midland to secure your spot and for more details on ticket options and prices. We are thrilled to be a part of the inaugural Music on the Diamond concert series, said Shelley Hingy, GM of the Midland Rockhounds. We are one of the five DBH teams that get to launch this exciting initiative, which is only the beginning of many great events coming to Momentum Bank Ballpark. We are truly blessed to share this with the community of Midland because it not only showcases the versatility of our ballpark, but also reinforces our commitment to providing entertainment to the community that never fails to support our organization. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. Midland College honors Coach Ron Jones for 700 career wins, April 23, 2024, by staff report. Midland College faculty and staff recently gathered to celebrate women's basketball head coach Ron Jones, who achieved a major milestone with 700 career wins against Panola last November. Jones was presented with a postseason plaque to commemorate the achievement. 700 wins is not something very many people attain, particularly at one place, said Athletic Director Forrest Allen. So we're incredibly happy to be able to recognize Coach Jones for his continued excellence as he leads the Lady Chaps. On the night of his 700th win, the Midland Reporter-Telegram noted how Jones was not someone who celebrates the early season victories too much, but could at least crack a smile at the one his team got on Thursday night. Now with the season in the rearview mirror, a gracious Jones shared plenty of smiles, as well as his love for Midland College and the community. When I got here as a student athlete, I didn't want to stay here because it was so ugly and flat, but now I don't want to leave, he said. It's been that way for a long time. The people grow on you at Midland College, and that's the thing that means the most to me, more than anything else. When you enjoy coming to work every day, it doesn't seem like work. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org livestream. One Accord for Kids holds expansion launch event for Heart Gallery of West Texas, April 23, 2024, by staff report. One Accord for Kids, a Midland-based community development organization for the West Texas foster system, recently launched expansion of the Heart Gallery of West Texas, which exhibits quality portraits and stories of children and youth in the community to promote local adoptions. On April 22nd, the program's expansion, supported by funding from the Texas State Legislature, was celebrated during an event at the home of Melissa and John Dorman that also served to recruit new program partners. Portraits of the children and youth were on display at the home, and remarks were given by nonprofit leadership as well as First Lady of Texas, Cecilia Abbott, who was credited with supporting the expansion. We are grateful to First Lady Abbott, the Texas Women's Commission, and others who have expanded our reach locally and statewide through the Heart Galleries of Texas initiative, said Brandon Logan, Executive Director of One Accord for Kids. First Lady Abbott lauded the Heart Galleries of Texas for its dedication to enhancing communication with local foster care professionals, a crucial step in the ongoing commitment to improve adoption outcomes. We look forward to the lasting positive impact on adoption outcomes for children and families across the state, she said. The concept behind the Heart Galleries of Texas dates back to 2001, when a photographer and adoptive mother inspired the New Mexico Children, Youth, and Families Department to start a Heart Gallery exhibit. Since, a picture is worth a thousand words. A similar program launched in Central Texas in 2014. Then in 2019, First Lady Abbott and Kim Fellen, wife of Speaker Dade Fellen, hosted a Heart Galleries of Texas exhibit at the Texas Capitol, sparking conversations that would lead to statewide expansion. When Accord for Kids launched the Heart Gallery of West Texas in 2021 in response to a dire community need, at the time about 60% of foster children in West Texas were placed with families outside of West Texas, which showed a need to raise awareness locally. The program places galleries with images of children seeking adoption in the community to draw interested families. Those families are then encouraged to visit an online gallery where they can read profiles, see more pictures, and inquire about children seeking adoption. One Accord for Kids also takes Heart Gallery kids on summer adventures. Heart Gallery programs especially seek to find homes for children who typically must wait longer for adoptions, such as older youth, sibling groups, and/or children with higher medical needs. Before this program, the only research social workers had to advocate for these youth in their caseload was a grainy photo taken on their cell phone. Heart Galleries of West Texas officials say their chance of ever being adopted was often less than 1%. Research shows that Heart Gallery programs can increase opportunities for adoption beyond 60%. Midland and West Texas communities have great champions who understand the needs of children in this community, said Corey Goh, director of the Heart Galleries of Texas. We are excited to bring a Heart Gallery to the community to help the stories of children waiting for adoption and reduce the numbers of children in foster care. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org live stream.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, April 20th. In the pipeline, Moss Lake Partners proposes a new pipeline in the Permian Basin. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. With the Matterhorn Express pipeline set to enter service in the third quarter, attention turned to the next big gas pipeline project to carry natural gas out of the Permian Basin. According to East Daily Analytics, that question has been answered. The company reported Moss Lake Partners has started the pre-filing review process with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for its Dayla Express pipeline. The proposed 42-inch, 690-mile pipeline would move up to 2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas from the Permian Basin to Port Arthur, Texas, and Cameron Parish, Louisiana. Rob Wilson, Vice President, Product at East Daily, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that there is a need for a new pipeline. Quote, effective capacity, even after Matterhorn, gets tight again, 95% utilization at the end of 2025, he wrote. Part of the issue when you run this right is that any pipeline maintenance really throws the Permian egress market off and has a huge impact on the Waha prices, as we've seen recently, end quote. Permian producer growth will be uneven, depending on the ability of gas, crude, and natural gas liquid egress to provide a logistical path to the Gulf Coast all at the same time, he continued. He predicted producers will grow into Matterhorn capacity, likely faster than the market expects. This will create another bottleneck until the Saguaro Connector Pipeline comes into service in 2029. Moss Lake has plans for an open house for interested shippers in May or June, according to East Daily. Jack Wexel, senior director at East Daily, pointed out that open house is non-binding. He cautioned that before Dayla Express goes through the permitting process, it has to attract shippers. Wilson wrote that unlike two other proposed pipelines, the Apex from Targa Resources and the Warrior from Energy Transfer, Dayla would transport Permian natural gas across state lines to new liquefied natural gas export projects in Louisiana. He added, it also stands out as a proposal to move liquids-rich natural gas. This, he explained, could let shippers bypass processing constraints in the Permian, by moving raw natural gas to the Gulf Coast and extracting natural gas liquids closer to the Mont Belvieu fractionation market and export docks. In the proposed project schedule, Moss Lake requests FERC certify the pipeline by April 2026. Moss Lake is targeting an in-service date of July 2028 for the pipeline. The Matterhorn Express is a joint venture between Whitewater Midstream, EnLink Midstream, Devon Energy, and MPLXLP. The 580-mile line will extend from the Waha Hub to the Katy Hub near Houston. Capacity is 2.5 billion cubic feet per day, designed to deliver energy for up to 20 million homes daily, according to the owners. East Daly expects line fill on the Matterhorn to begin in July. Moss Lake Partners is a private investor in midstream assets founded by J. Alexander Blackman and headquartered in Houston. Analyst testifies offshore oil and gas increasingly needed. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Geopolitical risk has been on the rise, focusing attention on domestic supplies of crude oil and natural gas. The House of Representatives Natural Resources Subcommittee on Energy and Mineral Resources this week held a hearing on solutions to secure the nation's offshore energy future and heard from Andy McCon, Director and Head of Commercial Intelligence at Enverus Intelligence Research. As part of his testimony, McCon stated that the nation's offshore resources have a significant role to play in addressing long-term supply concerns. Quote, "We believe no oil-weighted shale plays hold significantly more than 10 years of economically attractive inventory," McCon told the Reporter Telegram by email as he prepared for his testimony. He added in his testimony that the forecasts represent a sharp reduction from industry estimates years ago. Several factors play into that forecast of reduced onshore production growth: producers' desire to preserve drilling inventory, a diminished role for growth-oriented private capital, and investors' desire for capital to be returned to shareholders. The diminishing role of onshore shale basins, in conjunction with a lack of exploration activity and growth potential globally, opens up opportunities for U.S. offshore. McCon told the Reporter Telegram there already appears to be increased interest in the Gulf of Mexico. He pointed out that remote blocks in the growing lower tertiary play drew increased interest in the recent Gulf of Mexico lease sale number 259. Recent applications of hydraulic fracturing technology in the play have yielded some positive results, he reported. Quote, "We believe concerns about shale inventory scarcity and an undersupplied global oil market are causing investors and industry participants to pay more attention to the Gulf of Mexico," he wrote. McCon told the committee his company believes the global oil market is structurally undersupplied for the long term. OPEC has regained control of the oil market and investors looking for new potential sources of supply. Quote, "A change to market conditions, such as higher oil prices and or new government-led initiatives, could inject growth potential back into the U.S. offshore energy sector," he testified. BLM revises oil, gas leasing terms on federal lands. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. The Bureau of Land Management has updated fiscal terms for oil and gas leasing on federal lands. The new rule raises the minimum lease bond amount to $150,000, up from the $10,000 set in 1960, and sets the minimum statewide bond at $500,000 while eliminating nationwide and unit bonds. Under the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, royalty rates will be 16.67% until August 16, 2032, an increase from the current minimum of 12.5%. After this date, 16.67% will become the minimum royalty rate. The minimum bid at auctions for federal oil and gas leases will rise from $2 per acre to $10 per acre. Leases will include an annual rent of $3 per acre during the first 2 years, increasing to $5 per acre for the next 6 years, and then to $15 per acre thereafter. After August 16, 2032, these rental rates will become minimums and are subject to increase up from the previous rates of $1.50 per acre for the first 5 years and $2 per acre for the following 5 years. The Act also introduces a new $5 per acre fee for expressions of interest, with a rule outlining how the fee will be collected. The oil and gas industry has quickly responded to the terms. Don Natz, Chief Operating Officer and Executive Vice President of the Independent Petroleum Association of America, criticized the policy. Quote, "The final rule will not improve stewardship of federal lands, as BLM claims, but will drive mineral production off these areas," he said. He argued that the regulatory environment has become hostile to American oil and natural gas producers on federal land, indicating that the Biden administration intends for multiple use lands to be used only for conservation and recreation. Natz added that states and localities relying on revenues from federal land extractive industries are the true losers of this policy, as they depend on these funds to meet their annual budget obligations. The BLM defended its revisions, stating the new rules update outdated fiscal terms to increase public returns and discourage speculators and irresponsible actors. This marks the agency's first comprehensive update to onshore leasing since 1988, the first update to minimum bonding levels since 1960, and the first increase in royalty rates in over 100 years. The agency added that the rule aims to focus oil and gas leasing in areas most likely to be developed, areas with existing infrastructure and high oil and gas potential, thereby reducing development pressure on areas with sensitive wildlife habitats, cultural resources, high recreational use, or other special resources and values. Pause on LNG permitting draws GOP criticism. The story was written by James Osborne, Washington Bureau. The Biden administration is coming under renewed criticism from international allies and Republicans over the long-term consequences of its now three-month-long pause on the permitting of new liquefied natural gas projects. At a hearing of the House Oversight Committee on Thursday, Republicans grilled Assistant Secretary for Fossil Energy Brad Crabtree about the impact the pause will have on U.S. allies in Europe and Asia, which have come to increasingly rely on U.S. LNG supplies to power their economies. Quote, "This pause has caused great alarm with European allies," said Representative Pat Fallon, a Republican from Sherman, chair of the committee. Quote, "The Biden administration is undermining our national security. They have made it clear they want to end fossil fuel production and reach net zero greenhouse gas emissions at any cost," end quote. The administration announced the temporary suspension of LNG permitting in January as a necessary step to update a five-year-old analysis on LNG exports, including greenhouse gas emissions, jobs along the Gulf Coast, and the impact on domestic natural gas prices. At the hearing, Crabtree said the pause, which the administration says should be complete by early 2025, would affect only a small portion of LNG projects under development, with 48 billion cubic feet of export capacity already approved, four times current exports. Quote, "It doesn't affect allies in terms of immediate-term energy security," he said. "They are not alarmed. We have briefed our allies," end quote. But some officials in Europe and Asia are worried. This week, 35 European politicians, including members of the European Parliament, sent a letter to President Joe Biden saying the pause in new projects, quote, "undermines America's allies and the Western order more broadly. The Western world cannot stay ahead of our adversaries simply by standing still and hoping that our cooperation today will suffice for the future," they wrote. "We must plan ahead, expand our cooperation in energy and other fields, and prepare ourselves for the challenges of the future," end quote. Representative Mike Waltz, a Republican from Florida, said he had conversations with officials in Lithuania, Japan, and South Korea who were now looking into alternate sources of LNG out of concern U.S. supplies wouldn't be there in the decades ahead. Quote, "They are making long-term decisions, and the signal you sent to our allies is a big question mark," he said. In the meantime, Democrats are coalescing around the administration's hold on LNG as a responsible step in ensuring that what has been a booming business doesn't have unforeseen consequences in the years ahead. Beyond the environmental impacts, the country's growing industrial and manufacturing bases are reliant on abundant U.S. natural gas production, said Democrat Eleanor Holmes Norton, the District of Columbia's House delegate. Quote, "We rely extensively on our natural gas resources for our own economy," she said, "and we have already made a substantially export commitment," end quote. But along the Gulf Coast, where LNG has developed into a major employer and growing source of revenue for government and business alike, the pause on permitting has put many politicians on edge. Representative Clay Higgins, a Republican from Louisiana, accused the administration at Thursday's hearing of pausing permitting to drum up support among Democratic voters ahead of November's presidential election. Virtual Rehab. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. I love history. Historical documentaries are my favorite things to watch on TV, and I love to read about history as well. I think the reason I love that so much is because it reminds me that while there is a great deal of evil in the world, there is also a huge capacity in people to adapt and overcome and progress towards something better. Maybe it's naive of me to think so, but I truly believe that people who want to do good and make the world a better place far outnumber those that are evil. We just don't hear much about the good because it doesn't make headlines. One of the things that keeps my faith in good strong is how humans, we sometimes always find a way to make good come from bad. Yesterday, I read an article that reinforced that belief. It talked about how a technology change that came out of necessity during the COVID pandemic is making a big positive impact on recovery for stroke patients. Since stroke is the number one cause of disability in the U.S., positive impacts on stroke recovery have very big implications in improving lives. That technology is virtual rehab. During COVID, virtual doctor's visits went from being an emerging technology to a staple for many healthcare providers almost overnight. That technology allowed physicians, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants to continue to see patients during lockdown without concerns of spreading the virus for routine or chronic conditions. While many things still need the hands-on approach of a traditional visit, virtual visits have been a great adjunct for many healthcare provider offices because of the flexibility it allows. Out here in the basin, I think virtual visits services will make the biggest difference for those folks who live in our more rural areas and often have to drive hours to see a healthcare provider. It's not just healthcare provider offices that are hopping on the virtual visit bandwagon. It's other healthcare specialties as well. One of those is virtual rehab. Virtual rehab is physical therapy, occupational therapy, and/or speech therapy using FaceTime-like technology. The University of British Columbia's healthcare system in Canada started using virtual rehab as a way of working with their stroke patients who needed outpatient physical therapy during lockdown. Once you get about 100 miles away from the U.S. border, British Columbia is a lot like West Texas in terms of population density. Just like us, they have a whole lot of space and not many people. They found that those virtual rehab visits were especially popular with the patients who lived out in those rural areas. But they worried about those patients not seeing the same benefit as patients who had in-person visits once the strict isolation precautions of COVID were over. In order to find out, they began a study. The results of this study were very interesting. It was a small study, so further research is probably needed to make sure the results they found hold true in other places. But their results are so encouraging, I still wanted to share. In the study, the researchers looked primarily at 32 patients, all who had a stroke in the last 18 months, and who had their ability to walk affected. The participants all showed improvement in mobility and strength, and they all made progress in reaching goals. The thing that really caught my attention, though, was that the people who were virtual maintained their progress as well or better than those who had in-person rehab services. The researchers felt it was because the emphasis on self-management is higher with virtual rehab because the medium is in many ways built around self-management. Neuroscience is learning more and more each day about how our brains adapt after strokes and other brain injuries. A huge part of that is how we build new pathways for the tasks we do. In general, building those new pathways takes a great deal of time and repetition. That's why it is so important that people learn self-management in rehab so they can continue to build those new pathways even after the formal rehab phase of their recovery is completed. I just love seeing these little peeks into the future where something good is developed from something bad, and it just continues to build good. Virtual rehab could be one of those things, and like rural British Columbia, it might be something where we in West Texas don't just get the self-management benefits, but the access to healthcare benefits for our most rural populations as well. As a final note, I want to remind everyone most strokes are reversible if the person seeks care quickly. If a stroke is reversed, rehab is not as needed. Please, if you or someone you love is experiencing stroke symptoms, call 911. The best way to remember stroke symptoms is the algorithm Be Fast. B for balance, sudden loss of balance or dizziness, E for eyes, sudden changes in vision, F for face, sudden facial drooping, especially on one side, or sudden severe headache, A for arms, sudden weakness or tingling in arms or legs, especially on one side, S for speech, sudden difficulty speaking or confusion, and T, time. Time to call 911. Don't wait. Don't delay. Don't wait to see if it goes away. Call 911 immediately. With strokes, time is critical, and the window to reverse is only a few hours. Reversing a stroke is way, way better than any treatment to recover from a stroke, no matter how great that treatment technology is.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, April 20th, 2024. Religion. Church music director aims for happy medium. Damien Christian leads at St. Andrew Cumberland by Bob Campbell. Singer-pianist Damien Christian wants to help build a community of believers at St. Andrew Cumberland Presbyterian Church, and music is his means. Christian plays piano and leads the singing each Sunday at 11 a.m., and he hopes to organize a choir at the 1415 North Grandview Avenue Church, for which the main qualification is a desire to worship God with your voice, he said. We just want the sinners here. As long as you can hold a note, it doesn't matter who you are or what you look like. Christian is a 2020 Permian High School graduate and music and business major at Odessa College, who grew up with his grandparents, Edward and Brenda Christian, who also raised his twin sister and three cousins. He was an all-state singer at Permian in 2020. Christian credits all his teachers for helping him reach the point he is at now, especially Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School Choir Director Erica Lane Garza, who convinced him to develop his talent to the fullest extent. He is also learning to play the pipe organ. Having grown up at attending St. Matthew Baptist Church, Christian said, "We try to hit a happy medium of contemporary gospel music and traditional hymns. St. Andrew Cumberland is a safe place where we cater to people's hearts and needs. We understand that different people worship differently, and we try to respect that too. No matter what I do, I know that my help always comes from God." The Reverend Kyle Rogers, pastor, said Christian is a wonderful young man who is way ahead of his time and age. Damien is incredibly talented on piano and as a singer, the Reverend Rogers said. He is using his gifts for the Lord. We enjoy music as part of worship because God has put a song in our hearts. Show Compassion Toward Others by Tracy Villatoro, worship leader at Victory Church. Jesus wept, John 11:35. Everyone pretty much knows this verse. Here, Jesus, the God in the flesh, wept in front of Lazarus' tomb. Jesus was not weeping because of despair over the death of his friend, Lazarus. He knew that he would raise Lazarus from the dead. So why then was Jesus weeping? Jesus was not crying because he was weak. One reason he cried is because he saw the grief of those around him. In verse 32, it says that Mary bowed at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." In verse 33, it says, When Jesus saw Mary crying and the people with her crying too, he was very upset and deeply troubled. He had so much compassion for not only Mary, but also for the people. Even though he knew that he was about to bring Lazarus back from the dead, Jesus was affected by the sorrow that everyone was experiencing. Just as in this passage, our Heavenly Father cares very much for us and has so much compassion for us. Are you moved when others experience deep grief? Does it move you at all? Do you show compassion toward people even if it does not directly affect your life? Are you compassionate toward those whose lives are shattered by sorrow? Sometimes people complain about God, not knowing that he has a plan. Because they only think of themselves, they are upset, they are frustrated, and they cannot see the big picture like the Lord God can. Show compassion by going to the hospital when people are sick. Bring food to people at home when they don't have any. Write a nice card to someone and bring it in person to the needy one to show your love for them, or mail it if you can't visit them in person for any reason. Let's show compassion toward others. Features from the Bible. Truth in Scripture. The Man of God from Judah. 1 Kings 13. The Lord sent his spokesman from Judah to Bethel, to Jeroboam, who was standing by the altar to make an offering. This man of God spoke God's word against the altar. O altar, altar, this is what the Lord says. A son named Josiah will be born to the house of David. On you he will sacrifice the priests of the high places who now make offerings here, and human bones will be burned on you. The man of God told Jeroboam that the altar would be split apart and the ashes on it would be poured out. King Jeroboam stretched out his hand and ordered that the man of God be seized. His hand shriveled up so that he could not pull it back. The altar was split apart and its ashes poured out according to the sign given by the man of God. Jeroboam asked the man of God to intercede with the Lord and pray that his hand would be restored. The man of God did intercede with the Lord, and the king's hand was restored and became as it was before. The king invited the man of God to his home for a meal and promised that he would give him gifts. The man of God refused the king's invitation and explained that the Lord had told him not to eat or drink there.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.